The views and opinions of the host and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome to the Doctors In with me, Dr. Dinothra Archer Cartwright. Thank you on this Tuesday on Guardian Radio 96.9 at 6:30 p.m. for another exciting show on all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society. It's kind of been a little break since the last live show, so thank you for sticking with me and tuning into all the other shows. Of course, we are brought to you tonight, if I could get some quiet, brought to you tonight by Medical Concierge Services for all your medical healthcare needs. We are a family medicine clinic, so we see everybody from children to adults of all ages. We take care of all your general practice needs and more. Of course, we've got our specialty clinics that we do as well, IV vitamin therapy, microneedling, and of course our home care services. So if you need a doctor on call, just give us a call, 326-1521, and our WhatsApp line, 432-4010. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and of course our website, mcsfamilymedicine.com. I'm Dr. Dinothra Archer, family medicine specialist, and tonight we're going to talk about it. I did a couple of presentations lately, so I thought I would tap into some of that for our show tonight. It was Diabetes Awareness Month this month, so we're going to talk about diabetes. And if we have a bit of time, I also did a presentation for a Zonta event. Shout out to all my Zonta sisters. And we were talking about violence against women, so we will touch bases possibly on that tonight. Also, because it's been a little while since a live show, I'm going to open the phone line. So if there's something in particular, maybe over the last few shows that you wanted to get a question in, you really been thinking about, or you just want to tap into that conversation, you can give us a call at 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4255. You can't text me on the Guardian text app because I'm not in studio. So give me a call, or you can check me out on Facebook Live, The Doctors In with me, Dr. D, and you can also post your questions there. So we're talking diabetes. That's our main topic tonight, and just wanted to get into that a little bit because it's one of the big ones. It's something that you always hear about. But every time I talk to people, they still don't have all the pieces of the information together to really kind of understand, what diabetes is. Really a devastating disease that can take on so many different forms that I just tell people that you don't want diabetes if you can avoid it. The thing is, it's a chronic disease, and so it means that it's long lasting. There's no cure for diabetes. Once you're diabetic, you're kind of always diabetic. And we just find different ways of managing that problem when we say that it is a chronic disease. So that's why some people are on medication and they continue to be on medication. I tell my patients it's best to find out these things early because prevention is key. So if you're pre-diabetic, you know, your doctor is saying those type of words, then you really need to get in gear, kind of figure out what diabetes is and how to not become a full-blown diabetic. And so what really is diabetes? So it's this chronic health condition that affects the way that your body turns food into energy. So all of us, we eat our food, our food is converted into energy for all of our cells to just maintain our daily cells, everything that we do. And that food is basically broken down into what we call sugar. Mahavians call it sugar, you know, it's glucose. Mahavians call it sugar. So when you have diabetes, they say you have sugar, because that's when your sugar is really high. So your body breaks down the food into sugar called glucose, which is what you need. That goes into your bloodstream, and it signals your pancreas, another organ in your body, to basically release insulin. And by releasing that insulin, which is key, the body then turns that sugar into the energy you need to fuel your body. So that's all good. That's the normal way that your body would process food and use it to create energy. But what happens with diabetes is that your body doesn't make enough of that insulin or can't use the insulin because you've had so much sugar entering your body. So for people who are, and we'll talk about the types of diabetes, but for people who are usually type 2 diabetics, you know, the sugar has been pretty high for a while. And after a while, the body almost like says, you know, that's enough. And the hormone insulin that we use to regulate it, we just don't either produce enough or your body becomes what we call insensitive to it. And because you lose that sensitivity, you aren't able to regulate the sugar that's in your body the way that you should. So you have there, when these cells don't produce enough insulin or they stop responding to insulin, you end up with sugar building up in your bloodstream. And over time, this can cause serious health problems such as heart disease, vision, and kidney disease. And that's what a lot of people don't understand with diabetes. Most people don't realize that a lot of persons die from diabetes because of the consequences, the kidney disease, the heart disease, and these problems like vision loss. They usually start off in a lot of cases, especially in Bahamians, with being diabetic. So being diabetic, not having your sugar under control, leads to these other consequences that can lead to death. And so there isn't any cure for diabetes, but we have realized that there are certain risk factors that are related to having diabetes and how we manage diabetes. And those things include losing weight, eating healthy, being active. Those things are kind of like what we naturally prescribe for people who are diabetic or heading to be diabetic. So it's important early on to have really good self-management, which requires that you have the right amount of education about diabetes, as well as have the support and the resources to manage a chronic illness like this. Making and keeping health appointments so that you can grasp the whole situation surrounding such a grand disease that affects so many different aspects of your life, because diabetes can affect almost every organ, from the smallest vessel to a large organ like your kidneys, your heart. And so it really can be a debilitating disease that leads to a lot of consequences. Some of the frightening things that we see when we're in the hospital and on the ward. So you really don't want to be there. We'll just talk about like the major types of diabetes. And just before we go into that, just a few little statistics to just get us all on the same page. When we talk about diabetes, we don't realize that in the United States, there's 38 million adults living with diabetes. And 1 in 5 of them don't even realize they have it because they're just walking around without any symptoms at all, just like some maybe Bahamians. Diabetes is the 8th leading cause of death in the United States, and diabetes is the number one cause of kidney failure, lower limb amputations, and adult blindness. When I worked in the hospital, that was one of the really big things when I was in the surgical department. Amputations were mostly diabetics, losing toes, losing feet, losing lower limbs. Really, really gruesome stuff. You know, you cases of losing different parts of a limb until they were doing what we call an above knee amputation. And by the time you got to that point where you're doing an above knee amputation, that person's quality of life has really, really declined. And they're usually not going to do very well because if their sugar has gotten that bad, they're not healing well. There's so many things that are related to that situation that it never turned out very well. And it was a very, very sad process. Great thing about being a family medicine doctor is you really get to see all different specialties. You really get into what each specialty goes through, what they're seeing, and how to treat those things. So you get a lot of firsthand knowledge of that stuff, but it can also be very sad. That's why I'm not a hospital doctor, because I don't like that side of it. I prefer to be on the side of prevention. I want to help people stay out of the hospital, stay out of the tertiary institutions, and live a better and longer life. So diabetes, in the last 20 years, the number of adults diagnosed with diabetes has more than doubled. When we look here in the Bahamas, we find that almost 9% of the adult population suffer. That's a very large chunk of our society. And you can understand that how if health is wealth, then you know that is taking a lot of toll on both productivity, wealth building, and a lot of other things. So I'd like to tie in all of that stuff together. And we need to think about that when we look at how we are dealing with chronic disease in our country and how it relates to both economic, societal issues, and all that kind of stuff. It's very important. So diabetes, just like in the U.S., we have this problem with chronic disease, and diabetes is up there with hypertension and heart disease and all of those things. So very big issue. So the three main types, and we'll also talk about pre-diabetes a little bit too. You hear about these different types of diabetes. So what are we talking about? Well, type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and then you can have diabetes in pregnancy, which we call gestational diabetes. In our type 1 diabetics, we think of it more of an autoimmune reaction the body has. And it's something in the body reacts to those same cells that we were talking about. And it really stops your body from making insulin. And 5 to 10% of the people who have diabetes tend to be type 1s. Type 1 diabetics usually are diagnosed much earlier. They're really young, but it can be almost at any age. Symptoms often develop quite quickly. And if you have type 1 diabetes, you are usually insulin dependent. So you need insulin. No one really knows how to prevent that. So that just kind of happens. It happens really quickly. You realize with most people who are diagnosed, they tend to be younger people too. And you know, they get really sick, they end up in hospital, and they get put on insulin right away. That's our type 1 diabetics. And then we have our type 2s that make up the majority of the people. 90 to 95% of people living with diabetes is gonna be what we call a type 2 diabetic. And with type 2 diabetes, your body doesn't use insulin as well. You can't keep your blood sugar at normal levels. And over time, you start developing and it gets worse and worse. It's usually diagnosed in adulthood, but we're seeing that more and more children and young people and teens are actually developing what we call type 2 diabetes, which is not a good thing. When I was first training, you would say it was mostly older persons, people in their 50s and above, you know, people in their 60s, people who had maybe not been eating and taking care of themselves for a very long time. But as I've gone through medicine these past 14, 15, 16 years, younger and younger people are presenting with diabetes. And it's astonishing to see. And I reflect on my time in the public clinics and in the pediatric clinics. And I would say that childhood obesity is definitely contributing to that. And we do really need to look at we as a country, culturally, what are we feeding our children? And then we are in this fast food era where people are, feeding the kids fast food a lot. I know all parents are kind of like, they all kind of do it sometimes, but some people are living off fast food. And a lot of processed food and a lot of processed food quite early in the morning. So you're starting off the day with like sugary drinks and snacks and stuff like that. A lot of these kids are being set up to be diabetics and hypertensives from very early. And we say that some of this stuff is genetic, but what I see also is that a lot of it has to do with not just really cultural, but also like what people are passing down. So like, what are you doing at the family table? What things that you're doing? So it's like, yeah, there may be a genetic component, but the family as a whole, they're all eating a certain way. They're all lacking activity. They all have certain habits. And so they're just passing it on to the children. And they're type 2 diabetes, the most common type, is really kind of even encroaching into the younger people. And the thing about diabetes is you can have diabetes and have no symptoms whatsoever, especially with a type 2 diabetic. The sugar could be high, and if they're not getting annual physicals or regular checkups for any other reasons, they can just be doing damage to their body and they're just completely unaware. So it's really important to do some type of screening tests, especially if you find that you have the risk factors. And then you want to also just be on the track of prevention and delaying these types of things, even if you're predisposed, like you have a family history with lifestyle changes, such as losing weight, eating healthy, and being quite active. So those are really, really kind of important things to kind of think about. So this diabetes can be very debilitating. The third type of diabetes that I want to mention is gestational diabetes. And this is the one that some women develop when they are pregnant. They've never had diabetes. They've never tested positive for diabetes, but they present as a diabetic when they become pregnant. And I would say some of those women to me are like predisposed, or they were right on the edge or whatever like that. But a lot of changes happen to the body in pregnancy. And this is one of the things that kind of pops up. The problem with this is, even if you weren't a diabetic before, and then of course some people were not getting checkups either, so it's hard to tell, but you weren't a diabetic before, but the baby is at risk for a lot of health problems. So a lot of having that high level of sugar in the blood affects the baby, because the blood flow between the mother and baby is really, really important. That's where the child gets all its nutrients, and a lot of the protective factors are coming through the placenta and through the umbilical cord. And so gestational diabetes usually can affect the baby in a lot of negative ways. Sometimes they have very large babies, or the babies have other problems. But if it's truly and purely gestational diabetes, it tends to go away after the baby is born. However, it can be showing that you have an increased risk for type 2 diabetes later in life, and your baby is likely to have problems with obesity as a child and a teen, and may even develop type 2 diabetes in life. So it's so important for women to take care of themselves, not just for themselves, but because we are the ones at life, there's so much more responsibility of your health and also the child's health that is playing a role in all of that. So that is something really, really important. And then we're just going to mention prediabetes, which in the United States right now, there's about 98 million adults, more than 1 in 3 have prediabetes. More than 8 in 10 of them don't know that they really have it because they're not getting tested. Blood sugar levels are higher than normal, but not high enough for type 2 diabetics. So these are the people who are in the high normal. They are living lifestyle of, not eating properly and all that stuff, but they're not considered a diabetic by definition and by numbers. So, but they're leaning towards that way. And so before we never really worried about the pre-diabetics, just the lifestyle or whatever, but more emphasis has been put on prevention probably in the last 5 to 10 years, that we look at pre-diabetes as a strong risk factor for developing diabetes itself, heart disease, and even stroke. The really good thing about pre-diabetes is that this is the best if you recognize it at this stage, because once you have diabetes, it's really kind of difficult then to get off of that track, right? So lifestyle changes are extremely important at that point. And the CDC recommends having a really strong program for that and, you know, committing to at least a year. So what I like to do with my patients is 6 months to make changes and, you know, a year altogether. So that's really, really important if you have an intense program to get you out of the pre-diabetic stage or even the early diabetes stage. So I've had people who may have been just diabetic. We may put them on a small amount of medication or nothing at all, and we get them out of that phase within 6 months. And that means that you need to make really intense changes. You need to eat healthy. You got to give up some things, you know, that you might really, really love. You need to really add some physical activity to that and deal with stressors. That's super important that you deal with stress, because stress is a form of inflammation. And so that is a big part of it. You have to learn how to cope with the challenges that may derail you, your hard work, and look at how you incorporate those healthy choices and lifestyle into everything. And you just have to, you know, get on a strong program. I find with anyone under the age of 55, I'm really, when it comes to diabetes, anyone who's just really just either realized that, found out they've had diabetes or pre-diabetics, really, really aggressive program with those people, because I do believe that there are options off of medication, but they require quite a bit of work. So work and dedication is going to be super important for those people. And those people are really the ones that you want to work with all the time. And so I'm going to talk also about the symptoms of diabetes, because it's extremely important to know what may be some of the symptoms that may actually be that you might be diabetic. And like we talked about, you may not have any symptoms whatsoever. Maybe just going along with your life, totally unaware. And this is how some people end up, you know, in hospital, because, you know, they were perfectly fine. They weren't getting any checkups. And then they get really sick and they end up in hospital and someone says, you know, you're diabetic. So you really don't want to leave it to that. Prevention is key. So what are some of the symptoms? If you're having some of the symptoms, you really need to probably go and get tested and screened to ensure that you don't have diabetes, because the test is really simple. You can go to your doctor and basically get a random sugar test. And you can also do a blood test. I like to do an HbA1c. And so when you do those, we're able to give an indication if you're diabetic or not. If you're just doing a random test in office, you may have to come back and do it a second or third time just to ensure that those numbers are correct. And that's why usually if someone tests in office for a elevated sugar, the next step is to do an HbA1c to see what their long-term sugar levels have been doing. And so urinating, peeing a lot, and often mostly at night. So you hear a lot of people say, well, doc, I've been peeing a lot. Sometimes they think it's a urinary tract infection. Sometimes it is a urinary tract infection, but it can also be diabetes. So if you feel like, you know, you've been peeing a lot more than often, you've been getting up at night to pee often, and this was not a part of your normal routine, you do probably want to get that checked out and see, because if it's not a urinary tract infection, it can be a early sign of diabetes. If you're always very thirsty, so we call this, you know, always being very thirsty, always wanting something to drink. Doc, I've been drinking a lot of water, because the body tends to crave things to try to fix itself. And so if your blood sugar tries to flush the sugar out, it does that through the kidneys. So it makes you really thirsty. You want to drink, and hopefully you're flushing out some of the sugar. This may be a sign that you have elevated sugar in the blood and you do need to get that tested. If you start losing weight without trying, some people are like, oh, you know, I've been struggling with my weight, and then all of a sudden I just lost a bunch of weight. It may seem like a good thing, but it may also be early signs of diabetes, because it's a sign that your body's kind of fed up with all these high sugars, and it's just not storing energy or bringing in that energy, and so you start to lose weight. Are you very hungry all the time? So if you're always hungry, you're always craving stuff. I also find this is probably true for pre-diabetics as well, some of the stuff. So if you ignore some of these early symptoms, this is how you may end up with just full-blown having diabetes. Having blurry vision. We talked about that diabetes does affect a lot of organ systems, including the eyes. And so having blurry vision is one of those things. I was on another show recently where we were talking about this very subject, and a caller called in and he said that is what it was. He was driving one day and all of a sudden his eyes went extremely blurry. And when he didn't know what to do, he pulled on the side of the road and he was kind of panicking and his vision was in and out. And he was able to jump back in his car and get to the hospital. But when he got there, they were like, how did you make it here? Your sugar was like all off the roof. It was just so high. And from then he had issues with his eyes and has lost some of his sight. But that was his first indicator for him, his clear sign, which led him to the hospital, that he had diabetes. If you have numbness or tingling in the hands of the feet, and this can be a lot of different things, but it can also be a sign of diabetes. So because diabetes, like I said, it affects not just the vasculature, but also the nervous system. And so you can have neuropathy, which is an impact of the nerve system because of diabetes. That is a consequence of diabetes. So if you're feeling numbness or tingling in the hands and the feet, just off and on, then you might want to check that out. If you're feeling very tired all the time, and you get a lot of people come and say, I just feel tired, what could it be? Am I anemic? It could be diabetes. Like I said, you're not processing the sugar appropriately to create enough energy. If you have very dry skin, if you have sores that won't heal, so if you have cuts or sores that aren't healing, other consequences of diabetes is just have like sluggish white cells, and you don't heal very well. So these people don't do very well. And then finally, if you're having more infections than usual, so, you know, you're usually not sick and then you're getting sick all the time, it does make you immunocompromised. So diabetes, especially uncontrolled diabetes, does make you kind of like immunocompromised. So you may have more infections, you're not healing well, all of those things. There are a few other things specific to the types. Basically, like type 1 diabetes, you may also have symptoms such as nausea, vomiting, or stomach pains. Type 1 diabetes can be diagnosed at almost any age, and the symptoms tend to develop quite quickly over a few weeks or months, and they can be quite severe. And type 1 diabetics usually are the ones that end up in the hospital, because they can go into a state of acidosis in the blood, and you have to be very careful with them because they can get quite sick and need hospitalization. And then with our type 2 diabetics, usually it takes, they consider there's some genetic component. There's a lot of environmental and component as well, the things that you do. And some people don't notice, like we talked about, any symptoms at all with type 2 diabetes, and they usually start when you're an adult. And then more and more children and teens have been developing it, and they can have any of the symptoms that we kind of talked about. And then for gestational diabetes, most women in pregnancy will realize that they have gestational diabetes because Doctors will be testing for this between 24 and 28 weeks of pregnancy. And if you are having any of those symptoms, you want to just speak to your doctor earlier, because they will definitely need to know this because of all the issues it creates with children, you know. So those are the really, really important things to kind of think about and deal with. So how do you live with diabetes? You've got to manage it. You've got to manage your diabetes, because as we say, these chronic diseases do not have any cure per se. And so we're going to open the phone lines and then we're going to take a quick break. So you can give me a call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. We're talking about diabetes tonight, and the struggle, the chronic illness, and it's a part of the health burden. And I know a lot of people are dealing with it. How do we deal with living with diabetes, and how do we prevent ourselves from having it? These are the things that we're talking about tonight. And then we're going to talk a little bit about gender-based violence. So 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. We'll take a quick break, and we will be right back with me, Dr. D, on the Doctor's End.
At a time when jobs are hard to find, crime is a concern, and Bahamians are uncertain about the future of the country, there is one paper you can rely on as your source of news and commentary. The Nassau Guardian delves deeper into the issues. We ask the tough questions. We tell your stories. If you haven't already, pick up a copy today. The Nassau Guardian. News and views that matter since 1844.
Why? Why you look so mashed up? Like clothes at the washer?
Wait.
Hard day. What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking with everything, you know. This serious, boy. This real serious, boy.
Wait, what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave us boy one big, big contract. And nobody else get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody's saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he sent me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I's a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Crack Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Hello and welcome back to the Doctor's End with me, Dr. Denotha Archer Cartwright. Tonight we're talking right back into it. We have a caller on the line. Caller, are you with us?
A godly day to this doc in a voice with you, Doc.
Hello, good night.
We need justice, law, and order in this country. The more my mind go on you and the more I talk to you, you seem prettier and prettier. But I want to ask you a question. Right? When it comes to diabetes, right? When you look at the Bahamas and the Family Islands, which area, and of course Nassau, which area has the most diabetes disease in the islands?
You mean like which island?
which area in the islands? Okay, take for instance, we have Eastern District, Southern, Western, and stuff like that, right? And then you have pockets, you know, like, draw another example, say Mason area, right? Something that sort. So when you are statistic on situation as such, which area you found has the most diabetes, people with diabetes?
Well, I don't think anybody has really looked at it in that way. Sadly, caller, we don't do a lot of research here like that. I might be mistaken if there's anyone out there that's done research that looked at different areas, but I don't think they have, right? I
but
think
you know,
too, the country is very small.
You
we
know,
just have like these broad sense of statistics in terms of who's becoming diabetic.
Yeah, well, Doc, it needs to be stat.
There are some studies that look at it.
Because, you know, you would know, you all would know what position to put the people in to eat, what to eat, which they should not eat.
No, but yeah, but it's our country is really small, right? And if 9% of the adult population is suffering with diabetes, it's kind of across the board, right? Because, you know, that's a very large chunk. Like I said, in the United States, it's 38 million, which is about 10% of their population as well. So our statistics are very, very similar.
But, Doc, all of these doctors we have within the Bahamas, why is it that, no disrespect to you or anybody, why are you all allowing it to get so high? Why is it being escalated?
No, the people have to make different choices now.
Because we have to make
individual choices, and then we have to make community choices, and then we have to have national implementations.
But you see, you all got to teach them.
Well, that's why I'm here. I be teaching all the time. I don't know. Are you guys listening?
Well, you know, it just amazes me to see how our people are so sickly.
Yeah, you can't just blame the doctors. You have to also look at individual choices, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have different types of patients that sit in my office. I have the
patients.
I'm just saying to you, a lot of it comes down to personal choices as well, right? And it's very hard to break people out of things that they've been doing all their life. Their entire family has been doing all of their life. That's a really hard thing. And that's why I always talk about we need national policies as well as individual choices. And that's why I also stress that a lot of this stuff needs to be in the schools, just educating, because it's easier to educate than to re-educate. A lot of what I'm doing is re-educating. People are already doing that. We all have our busy lives and we're living a certain way. But my little bit is going to count here, but individuals also have to do some things. And then we need our government, our leadership, not just the government itself, our church leaders, our civic leaders, all of us need to be on one accord, because if we're going to adjust culturally to do something different, because we're living a Western lifestyle.
But they need to understand first. They don't really understand, you know. Like you said, you know, the church, everybody needs to herald it, right? But if you don't understand, if one don't understand, they don't know what to herald, how to herald, you know what I'm saying? So they have to get an understanding. But anyhow, thank you for your time, and you are an intelligent doctor. I suppose you're tired of me telling you that, hey.
No, sir. Thank you so much. I love it. Okay, we have another caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Pleasant good evening. How are you, Doc?
Pardon me?
Okay, how are you?
Oh, I'm really good. Thank you. How are you doing tonight?
It's going to sound really strange to you, but okay. I worked at Crystal Palace back in the day, all right? So they make me these sweet daiquiris every... He does his experiment on me, right? Until I got... I got diabetic because my friend from Bimini came down here and I saw, and I told him, I said, man, Chucky, man, I can't stop pissing. I said, sometimes I even piss my bed. He said, boy, that don't sound good. He said, boy, that sound like sugar. So I say, I know what that is. But him knowing the way I am, he said, and you need to go to the doctor, man. And lo and behold, he came knocking on my door, must be about 8 o'clock that morning, the next morning. I said, boy, Sydney, I know you ain't there, but I can't use the doctor. So I went. I went to the hospital. They took a test and all that stuff. And I got a ride home. As soon as I walk up the stairs to go to my apartment, I hear a phone ring. I said, usually that's the time my mother would call me, but it was a little early. I said, who's this calling me? So when I called, the person said, this is a nice so-and-so. You need to come to action in the emergency right now. So I said, okay. So when I got ready, gone back out, I just came home now. I gone back to the action emergency. Somebody was there saying, are you Sydney? Blah, blah. And I said, yes. And they bought this wheelchair for me. I say, I don't need no wheelchair. He say, don't worry about it. They're sitting in a wheelchair. We can take you. And when I went to the to inside there, the doctor tell me that my sugar was 951. I said, what that mean? He said, yeah, we must go for like 3 people. I said, okay.
I don't know what 500 is. Oh, that's a lot.
Yeah. So they keep me in. Listen to this now. First of all, I was on insulin, Novalanil, mm-hmm. I think 75 units in a day and 25 a night. All right. I went through that. Oh, man. My sugar was up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. And even the rest of the patients who was on the ward, say, man, stop sticking that, because every hour they had to stick me.
Mm.
And I say, man, Jesus Christ. And they felt so sorry for me. Say, man, let that man sleep, man. Poof, they stick me.
I'm surprised they didn't have you on an infusion.
No, somebody told me, say, I should have been in a coma and all kinds of stupid. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, I say that to say this.
Yeah.
So my friend told me, say, man, come to Bimini, man. So I was taking my insulin. Then I had to go to a clinic. I had to do a fast and go to a clinic to get my results. But that morning I forgot, and I had been some banana bread and some apple juice. Listen now. And so I say, oh, Lord, I mess up. I mess up big time. So anyway, I go on. And I go on. My sugar was like 109. I say, what? And so I say, anyhow, okay. I keep on taking insulin. Because my thing was every Tuesday. And so I went there for a Tuesday. And they say my sugar was 99. I say, okay. I say, you know something? I'm taking this thing. The same for the general public, the doc. Oh, you. This could be divine intervention, okay? And, I say, man, because he really get tired of the needles, okay? Mm-hmm. And I say, man, I'm tired of this. So I take some insulin. I say, for 2 weeks. So when I go on to the clinic again, I say, nurse, if somebody is on insulin and they don't take the insulin for 2 weeks, what will happen? He say, you'd be a dead man or you'd be in a coma. And I said, okay. So I didn't tell her what I did. So a couple of months, I went there. I keep on going until I just completely stopped. And now that has been almost, what I should say, 20 years or 20-something years, I haven't taken no insulin. But I'm just saying that sometimes some people have got misdiagnosed. Sometimes. Mm-hmm.
I was just about to tell you that you were on insulin, but more diabetic. Right? What happens a lot of time, and then you said you left the island, so that you probably didn't do follow-up with the doctors in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So what that probably means, I'm not sure, but what that probably means is that you're a type 2 diabetic. What happens when you're a type 2 diabetic and you come in the way that you do is they will put you on an insulin. And if you're getting sick often, they probably put you on what we call a sliding scale to get your insulin level kind of leveled out. Now, as a type 2 diabetic, it is possible to manage your diabetes, especially if it's a new onset, with lifestyle adjustment. So you talked about the sugary drinks that you were having constantly at the hotel, probably were more stressed because you were living in Nassau, all of those things. When you changed your lifestyle, you probably saved your life.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've been back to a doctor just to make sure, whatever like that, because it never really goes away. You manage it in different ways. If you catch it early enough, you can manage it with lifestyle. If you catch it late, then it gets more difficult.
But and you end up with tablets eventually. What happened to me, my childhood, my mother, I never knew that she was hypertension, right? But how she would cook, I always enjoyed it because that's my mom, not even for my mom.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Right? So, Damon's like a seasoned pot.
So, yeah. So when I eat with somebody else, I say, well, why do you have food things like that? You're putting salt in? No, I don't. And so I don't know because of that, because I don't like that. And then she's a person like that. She would do a conch salad without conch, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that was her favorite thing, and then that became my favorite thing. And she did a lot of vegetables and stuff like that. And I particularly enjoyed it. So sometimes when people used to see me eat, they'd say, Sydney, where you buy that food from? I say, man, in the same place you buy your food from, but I know what I want, right? I say, I even the day I'm finished. And so I be like, okay, maybe my mom saved me, you know, because the way she died and what she used to eat, I end up doing the same thing. I like fruits. I love fruit and vegetables. And I like, you know, steam, boil vegetables and stuff like that. But if you see me, you'll be like, oh, man, this guy eats a whole dog and a whole cow every day. No.
Since then, have you gone back to a doctor? You ever checked on your sugar levels or your blood pressure or anything like that?
I used to be kind of pompous about it because when I go on to the doctor a couple of times, I say, man, what you doing? They're taking my blood pressure, they're taking my sugar. I say, man, I'm good with that, you know. No, we got to take this, we got to do it. I say, okay, good, go ahead. Right? But I'm saying that to say this. There's been a lot of misdiagnosis of people who, I'm not saying everybody, but, you know, it's possible that these people being misdiagnosed and, you know.
No, a lot of people aren't being misdiagnosed. A lot of people are just don't do a lot of follow-up, and then it's understanding what's going on. So from a medical point of view, like I understood what you went through. I think patients take it a different way because, like I said, you didn't do the follow-up with the medical doctors to find out exactly what was happening. So when you're in hospital, their main goal is to get you out of a critical state.
Yeah.
Once you're out of a critical state, that's when your real management or clinical care starts to happen. Because different things could have caused you to be in that state.
Yeah.
And so I can't say a here nor there. I'd have to look at your notes. But from what you said, that's what I can see happen. You had like an acute episode of something that happened, triggered by I don't know what. Might have been your lifestyle at the time or what was going on. The doctor realized that they had to work really hard to get you out of that state. And then...
I suffer with that now. Jesus Christ. I watch Junkie on TV in the hospital.
Yeah. So I would say the silver lining there is
I've been
thank God you made it. Right?
And you
won't be drinking a bunch of sugary daiquiris anymore, right?
No. It's fine. I'm like a medical guru, especially with my girlfriend. I mean, man, come on, man. You just eat a chocolate. You go eat another one, right? So she'd be looking at me like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So you learned your lesson, and you made some. You made a 360. You made a 180.
A lot of people don't understand this too. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to keep you long.
Yeah,
because you know, in the environment that I work, you know, guys come in a tray with cakes and pastries and things, and so I tell my girlfriend, those are poison. I'm kind of blunt with it, so I just say, look here, man. They are poison. You cannot eat them, right? And so I tell myself, that's the way you're talking to me, do you know? I say, no. Maybe once in every blue moon, I'll take a little bite of something, fine. But other than that, no. And we are people, and artists, and our country, you can learn these things, man. Like poison, like orange soda. You might think it's okay, it tastes good, okay, gonna be punch, right? But they poison.
Yeah. Huh? Well, thank you, Sydney. Thank you for your story. I mean, you really hit it on point of what that can mean if you're not like focusing on what's going on and you're putting stuff into your body, and kind of the consequences of what that could be. And I thank God that you were able to make it out of there and were able to change some of those things to live a much cleaner life. So I appreciate your call.
Yeah, God bless you, man. Thank you. Love you.
Yeah,
bye.
Good night. Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, so it really is important. I mean, that is a story directly from a Bahamian that was affected by his lifestyle. And, you know, he made it out of a difficult situation. He should have been in the ICU. He made it through and was able to change his lifestyle quite a bit, even change his location, right? So he was off on the islands away from a lot of the things that he was eating and doing. And it just shows you how much lifestyle can impact your health. You take this as Bahamians because we do live this lifestyle of like abundance, and more than abundance, it's a very high sugar, high fat diet. And like, I'm not a person that eats a lot of carbs, but I've been tracking on my app, you know, the fat content and different things and certain things I eat to just kind of see where I can tweak and do things differently. And though, even though I wasn't eating a lot of carbs, I realized that some of the things that I was eating had a higher fat content than I realized. And that's where I really need to focus on my personal health journey as well. And if we are conscious of these things and we're able to make changes, we can do that. But as a community, as a nation, we need some change. We need some policies. We need some direction across the board, because we have a really unhealthy nation. And it's not a really good way for us to be. It's making us struggle. And we're quite high in the region in terms of this because our lifestyle and what we have, and just the fast food and the sugar, it's really, really harming us. And our ancestors worked a lot harder. They ate a lot less sugar. We have a lot of modern medicine that's helping us go along. So now the key is to have a good quality of life, to not just make it to 80 or 90, but to have a good quality of life. I had a gentleman in my office, a man and his family don't make it past 55. And yeah, there may be a genetic component, but when we looked at the things that his family was doing, we realized that this is a lifestyle issue. And that if you don't make that change, then you'll continue that lifestyle. So our goal is for him to break that family cycle and make it past his 50s, into his 60s, into his 70s, and be one of the first men in his family to meet his grandchildren, be there and be a part of their life. And it's about changing lives. That's why I do it. That's why I do the show, because I'm super busy. I should be doing, like, I guess, some other things or whatever. But I thank you all for listening tonight, for being with us here on Guardian Radio 96.9. You know, always great to hear from the listeners, and know that I'm making an impact on people's health and the way that they're looking at health education, because it's really so important and it needs to be a priority in this country. So I'll see you guys all next week for another exciting show on health, wellness, and things that pertain to medical concierge services. Good night, everyone.